Bubbleship AV-04's forward camera caught it first. The sudden tumbling of another bubbleship out of formation. A spray from its port panels indicating some sort of leak. Catastrophic coolant loss to any outside eye, with the ship spinning dead, belly up over and over in the middle of the fray. Meanwhile, AV-04 was locked into an engagement course with the Allegiance, its waves of AI ships rising high to the left field of the viewscreen. Other ships started to feel the heat of their enemies' long-range weapons soon after. Sides scored until decompression became imminent. Comm lines riddled with panicked ship's officers' last prayers for themselves and their son. One little busted bubble ship hurtling so far ahead wasn't much then, in the scheme of things, with AIs dodging so much debris on both sides. A streaker ship called the Jalfreda caught the best footage of what happened next. The little bubble ship's tumbling suddenly becoming less predictable, more of an uneven wobble just below the plane of the leisurely advancing Allegiance fleet. To the invading AIs, the little ship surely registered no sign of active onboard processors, not with the coolant gone and the engines superheating the rest. So it fell into background noise, along with all the other debris still being accounted for on their maps. Then, all the Allegiance ships proximate to the little bubble ship went dark, like a ripple, extending outward from bubble ship XF-32. An EM pulse, knocking out ion shields and disrupting processors in turn. Those still in the shipyards watched in stunned silence at first, but then that magnetic ripple hit the mechanics too, in its own way. And with a cry of triumph, bodies collided with bodies, detritus flung about the mess. The EM pulse lessened in intensity as it broadened, so the ships at the fringe of the fleet still hurtled forward, unaffected. But with the Allegiance temporarily halved, Novuni fighters stood a better chance. And they took it. Not enough to win, but enough to drag the invaders into a standoff. Then a ceasefire. A broadcast from General Aceris eventually reporting that the Allegiance had promised a rep from one of its time-dilated worlds, a figure of significant corporate authority who would articulate their demands more clearly than any heard around Novan Prime to date. "Now," said the General, over vidscreens system-wide 3 days after first strike, "we negotiate a lasting peace, or we die trying." In those 3 days of combat, all aboard the shipyards had alternated between volatile bursts of celebration and anxiety. More drinking, more quarreling, more breakneck labors over wounded ships back in port. All, that is, except one. Imbra, who slept and worked and ate and drank amid the other mechanics' frenzy like a man disembodied, wandering at a remove from creatures so wildly impassioned he almost couldn't believe they were of the same species, let alone tribe. But once the battle was over, Miha clapped Imbra's back just the same and reassured the northerner that he hadn't missed out on much, not being able to weep as openly for the protracted lease on life that one little ship had brought to all the rest. Imbra nodded at the gesture, but couldn't bring himself to reply. A lump lodged in his throat because the dread still lay within him, deep down, only lacking the right physical response to flourish. He kept replaying footage from the Jalfreda instead. The slow approach of Allegiance, the sudden strike of the EM wave, the darkness, and then, in the midst of it, the slightest movement. The ejection of a life pod, barely noticeable, from XF-32. Paloma's life pod resurfaced a week after the ceasefire. A whole week in which his ship's maneuver had been chalked up to General Aceris's craftiness, her unparalleled head for deep strategy beneath all her openness with the fleet about tactics. Only Ren, also alive, if shaken up from her time in the field, suspected otherwise. Within hours of her return to the shipyards, she found Imbra running diagnostics routines and stood at the edge of his work module, her lean frame as tense with anger as Paloma's, on the surface, had been. "He's alive," said Imbra. "I know he is."
"He'd better be," she said. "Easy enough to toss you out an airlock if he's not."
Imbra notched a brow. "Lot of hatred from a southerner. You must really love him."
"Don't patronize me," she said. "D-Claws don't vote in the South. They don't get a say. They get to shut up and give back to society until their time in the sun is done."
"Does it really matter who contributes, so long as the war comes to an end?"
"Yes,"
she said, and clearly meant it. Imbra's lips twitched, but he held back a smile. "Credit's all his," he said. "I don't want it. Once he gets back, he'll be a hero. More than he already is. They'll name schools after him, promote him 2 grades, salary for life." Ren didn't look convinced, and Imbra didn't blame her. Not even when Paloma returned to the land of the living, haggard and haunted from his time in stasis. Certainly, the celebrations for the Novuni's latest hero were wild enough. His name resounded through the system far and wide enough, and the accolades poured on him were lavish enough, too. But in the process, in private, Paloma had told someone in command the full story. Next thing Imbra knew, he was standing before General Aceris herself on the bridge of the NSS Ragnara.
"I could have you thrown to the courts, or straight out an airlock for what you did," she said. "On your own, without oversight, without permission."
"Yes, sir," said Imbra.
"But since it doesn't really change anything in the long run, you might as well live."
With that, she pinned bridge crew insignia on his collar and assigned him a bunk on the ship. 3. A Novuni proverb. Even the planet runs in circles. Mother help the fool who thinks in straight lines. In person, General Aceris remained larger than life. An illusion aided in no small part by a uniform and unwavering gaze that commanded attention, despite the bun crowning her flat twist hair coming no higher than the shoulders of some of her bridge crew. Imbra, his own coils a wild tangle more days than not, took with difficulty to the standards of dress and conduct aboard the NSS Ragnara. The ways of the valley, Biggs's ease with the law, Trip and Hurley's excesses on the right side of it, he'd been able to manipulate with only minor physical concessions, even while the shipyards had their share of play, from Grot's teasing to Miha's unhinged banter. But the stringency of life aboard a military vessel had yet to offer any easy evasions. Every day shift at 6 bells, Imbra stood for inspection, and failed, miserably. And after reprimands and first meal, seated himself at 8 bells at the back of the war room, reviewing schema after schema, littered in the jargon of half a dozen sub-disciplines he could barely identify, let alone parse. "I'm just a valley hick with a knack for machines," he said on the first day, while posing a question about a recurring symbol to the shipmate beside him. Lieutenant Bastris answered his question, but not before pinning him with a look that plainly read, "We'll try harder." And Imbra did, though his head felt sluggish for reasons that neither the D-Claw nor the lingering hearing loss could fully explain. He ran simulations of ambush paths, decoys, and direct full-frontal assaults across the asteroid field and gas giants, trying to beat an AI in scenarios where the Allegiance had prepped an invading force to overwhelm the system on what civilian news was already triumphantly calling Treaty Day. In every case, Imbra failed, and in every case, he ended the day reporting on his failure to General Aceris herself, her back turned to study the muddy sun through a slice of ship's glass.
You could get an AI to run these same simulations, he added at the end of his third shift. Faster, more efficient, probably with better results. Sir. We have, said Aceris. She steepled her fingers and glanced at Imbra over a shoulder. And no, recruit. It's a failure every time. But as I told you in our first conversation, it doesn't matter. None of it, in the long run. Sir? They even anticipated you. Did you know that? Not you specifically, but the trouble you caused. Just as they anticipated, and maybe even constructed, me. Imbra wore his confusion too plainly to answer. The allegiance, the general explained. There's been talk that they're shaping the whole contest. That the game was rigged before it began. The well-loved general. The underdog story. The hotshot hero pilot. All of it. Wild theories about their reasons, too. But then, that's what you get when you deal with an ancient people. A people living in time dilation like nothing we've ever known. Have you heard any of these wild reports? Imbra thought of the look on Biggs's face a lifetime ago. The hesitation of a man who knew crazy when he saw it, and who apparently had seen it in archives, but who had decided at the last against passing on the disease. I've heard that the theories get wild, sure. But not the theories themselves. Aceris nodded. Good, I suppose. Some ideas are hard to let go of once they take root. They eat at your sense of being, your sense of purpose, until there's almost nothing left. You do have a creed, don't you? Of a kind. Imbra noted the general's quick glance at his bare skin, no tattoos to indicate his side on the question of the sun. Enough to get by. At the emotion rising then on General Aceris's face, Imbra surprised himself with a sudden tightness, a knot in the muscles below his ribs. He'd almost thought that sort of eagerness behind him, but hers was such a sad, unexpected smile. Another kind of try harder. So he did. At the beginning of his next shift, Imbra took a different tack, opting to review the ship's onboard archives before taking another run at the simulator. After all, the main trouble with the simulations was temporal. The Allegiance simply had more time on their side. But why? Life on Nove's northern continent hadn't offered the greatest education in system-wide or interstellar history, but Imbra knew that the Allegiance and the Novuni had first met centuries ago, which seemed like plenty of time to stabilize tech trade with such a vast economic power. And sure enough, as the Ragnara's records showed, since first contact, the Allegiance had indeed offered all the Novuni all manner of trade packages, including one bundle of neurotech responsible for declaw procedures, in exchange for raw and semi-refined resources system-wide. There had, however, always been one notable exception to the Allegiance's side of the pot. In every trade brief Imbra came across, any advances related to interstellar travel remained strictly off the table. Certainly, the Novuni had developed significant EM technologies on their own over the centuries, but they hadn't yet mastered the energy reserves needed for proper long-distance shielding, nor the systems needed to protect human beings through huge shifts in speed at the end of the ride, though the life pods were getting close. Nor could the Novuni build to such speeds in the first place, although some on Hav were currently tinkering with possibilities involving laser tech. In short, hundreds of years of uneasy partnership on, the Allegiance still largely dictated terms by which anyone around Novan Prime could ever hope to leave the system. And eventually, someone in Central Gov had objected to this arrangement. When talks fell apart, though, the Allegiance sent for the fleet surprisingly fast. Imbra remembered hearing tell in the valley of what happened next, how only by dint of General Aceris's quick thinking had a deal been struck at Fort Five to spare lives and return mining operations to their original trade framework. But the accelerated time frame of initial proceedings baffled him as he sifted through official records. General Aceris's peace only held until the miners rebelled, too. After that, the allegiance took even more exaggerated offense to the Novuni, and its representative left with a declaration of total war. By shift's end, Imbra could see why so many of his people talked of conspiracy. The point of growing contention between the Novuni and allegiance could have been predicted from the outset of their dealings, while the allegiance's split-second decisions to wage war at the first sign of protest suggested that someone in the greater galaxy had been waiting for the Novuni to grow restless. Only the reason for such a long-game approach lay out of Imbra's reach when he logged off for the night. If the Allegiance simply wanted the Novan Prime system, why not take it from the outset? On his next shift, Imbra stared for hours at the speckled panels over his desk and remembered Ezrin's Gulch. The heat of it as a child. The threat of magma churning in rivers not so far underfoot. Before the dam broke, and major bridges fell, and the hills and the valleys realigned at great cost to human life. Historians attributed the continent's haphazard geology to the haste of ancient terraformers, but northerners knew better. Whatever side of the sun's gospel they preferred, hazards existed because the Novuni existed, because Mother either reviled or adored them so unbearably much. As a child, Imbra had always been the fastest over the hot valley stones, dash to anyone who knew him, but not because he was the fastest on foot. In a straight sprint over a strip of flat land, he would lose to Trip and Hurley as often as Wynn, if not more. But give him a path that forked in odd ways, give him a land that wouldn't yield, and Imbra had always been quickest to work the trick out. "You're supposed to be working?" Bastris's voice cut through his daydreams. "I am working." But Imbra drew himself to a stiff-backed, upright position. "Could have fooled me." Imbra nodded to her station. Bastris rigged up to comms, her own display running simulations of a different magnitude. "Figured out how to evacuate everyone yet?" Bastris offered up a grim smile. "Not gonna happen." "Oh, you're on the path too, are you? I dare you to find a loving embracer on this ship." She nodded toward the rest of bridge crew. "We all know the futility of the situation. The general doesn't hide anything from us. Still, the real test is dignity at the end. Putting on the best possible show of force." "Sure, that's one way, I guess." Imbra scratched the side of his face. Bastris's sidelong glance vaguely resembled amusement. "Oh, and you've got a better idea." Imbra shrugged, drumming his hands on the desk. "Just thinking is all. You know, these AIs in the sims I'm running, they remind me of these twins I used to know. Hurley and Trip. Loved to win, always played to win. But if the two ever fought with each other, you knew the outcome from the outset. Trip always had the upper hand before, so he always won in the end. Just like the AI playing the Allegiance in these sims against the AI playing our fleets. The Allegiance starts with the upper hand, so it always wins in the end." "Exactly my point," said Bastris. "Futile exercise, but one we all endure anyway. Except that Trip never really won against me. Not really. Not when we were young, and not even after I'd been declawed. As a kid, I'd beat him in races over the gulch. As an adult, I took away his satisfaction when he tried to lay into me." He glanced over the workstation and noted that Bastris was paying close attention, even if she didn't seem the type to humor him with further questions. Not even a how. I didn't play to win, see? Can't win against someone who won't accept the stakes. Bastris shook her head. We're not surrendering, if that's what you're thinking. That's not an option. Even if we wanted to. Treaty Day's set for 6 cycles from now. And already the Allegiance's next wave is just waiting at the edge of the heliosphere. The game they're playing, the way they keep toying with us. We're in this until we win or we die.
I'm not suggesting surrender, said Imbra. I'm saying... But he cut himself off, a deep furrow settling on his brow as more gears turned. The predictability of a clash on Treaty Day, like the predictability of the war itself, cast aspersions on even this brief reprieve from combat, and the rogue EM pulse that first allowed for it. Imbra had simply assumed that AIs registering no AI from a ship in the middle of AI to AI combat wouldn't destroy the errant object anyway. But Paloma hadn't even been piloting that well. Just enough to nudge his bubble ship right below the Allegiance's fleet, a fleet that for some reason was advancing toward theirs at a leisurely pace. Had the winning move been, if not anticipated, at the very least permitted by Allegiance from the start? The thought could not be unthought. Imbra felt a faint chill, the merest echo of a proper fear response, and stood suddenly, gripping his desk at the ensuing wave of nausea.
Breathe, recruit, said Bastris. I'm not catching you if you pass out.
They could have torn through us in minutes, said Imbra. But they didn't. They took their time. They waited.
They sure did.
Bastris's voice was too upbeat. Imbra gave her a hard stare. Where's General Aceris?
Still in talks, I'd imagine. But you might try the bay.
Bastris wasn't far off. Imbra found the general in a portside corridor, watching the dull brown glimmer of the sun after flight crew inspections. Not praying, she'd told him after one shift. Just contemplating how to exist in a universe that operates at such unfathomable magnitudes.
I have a plan, sir, he said. But you're not going to like it.
General Aceris turned slowly, her dark eyes hard enough that his own watered.
Recruit, she said. I haven't liked a bit of this from the start.
But she waited for him to go on. General Aceris chose her own team for Imbra's special assignment, but at Imbra's request, she also granted Paloma passage to the flagship to be part of the final send-off. While preparations continued for Treaty Day, and for the evacuation and defense fleet that would be required shortly after, some 2 dozen willing crewmates were briefed on their impending missions and given the time they needed to grieve. A believer in her loving embrace would have found solace in the idea that life went on, but a crew predominantly set upon the path of the vengeful sun needed to adjust to their new fate, to live longer, much longer, than any of their doomed colleagues left behind.
Time is not on our side, said General Aceris to her team. For decades, if not centuries, we've been playing the long game on the Allegiance's terms, and in a few days, it will surely lead to our ruin. We've all seen the size of their ships, the indifference of their agents to genuine calls for peace. What else remains for us, then, but to play the long game, too, the only way the Novuni know how?
She went on to wish her team peace, and prayed with them, and sent them to make final arrangements. Only Imbra, she told, to hang back.
Have you been in stasis since the surgery?
When Imbra shook his head, Aceris hummed.
I wonder, she said, if it will be easier for you. Without all that fear when the body struggles with the stasis fluid, unable to believe what the mind already knows.
Only one way to find out, said Imbra. The general watched him closely, as if for signs of visible apprehension. Seeing none, she nodded. Your friend has arrived, by the way. You can go under any time. Imbra smiled. I doubt he'd see himself as a friend. Associate, then. But you're sure you wouldn't rather a proper stasis crew? He'll pick it up quickly. He's young, but he's already seen action, and he knows what stasis is like, too. That's a benefit, is it? In this case, absolutely. General Aceris didn't press, so after finalizing other details, Imbra went to confer with his fellow northerner in the docking bay. Paloma looked older, somehow, after weeks of being lauded as a system-wide hero for a set of actions prescribed for him by his mother's killer. He certainly made no attempt to hide his displeasure at seeing Imbra again. I could murder you, you know, said the kid. I could put you under in a way that guarantees you never wake up again. I know, said Imbra, and I'll take that risk. I've owed you that much all along. But if you don't, you're the only one I can count on to do what I need someone to do. Paloma's expression remained hostile as Imbra went on, but at least the kid listened, which was all Imbra could hope for. On the way to the life pods, Imbra was tempted to ask something else. How Ren was. Whether Paloma had been back to Nove and visited his mother's grave. But every note of affected camaraderie felt flat and wrong in the back of his throat. Before prepping for immersion, Imbra held out a key pass instead. I don't know if you'll ever get back, he said. But if you do, take this to Biggs. It's a copy, with a holo note from me. The garage, bullet, everything. It's yours. Paloma clicked his teeth, setting the key pass beside the controls. You can't bribe me that easily. But he paused before adding, Are you scared yet? Not gonna beg, are you? Imbra, lying in the dark womb of the life pod, shook his head as Paloma started the process. And then the seal came up all around him, and Paloma's last words couldn't be heard through the tiny front window. But Imbra's body, in the end, could not be so easily tricked into calmness. Even with the declaw, he shivered violently as the stasis fluid rose, and his lungs resisted breathing to the bitter end, and even when fully submerged, and so Imbra went to sleep screaming, and stayed screaming, for what felt like 100 years. 97 years, give or take. His skin felt like twisted bark when the freight crew pulled him from the battered life pod. At first, Imbra could not register his arms and legs, let alone speak. But after days in the infirmary, realizing from the steady beep of machines that his tinnitus had passed, he started to notice larger details outside of himself. The Allegiance insignia, for instance, on the medical officer who so painstakingly coaxed him to health. Quite the journey you've been on, said the slender, faintly luminescent being who called itself Yarun. I guess there's no one we can call. Imbra shook his head. A painful, sluggish maneuver. Where? On the Umbara. We're a small operation, running supplies to various outposts the cruise ships use for debarks along the way. Imbra still struggled for basic control over his facial expressions, but his confusion came naturally enough. Yarun hummed understanding, even sympathy. Cruise ships. Yarun explained. For tourists from the Allegiance's central worlds. Those are some wildly rich families, I tell you. Kept in luxury stasis. Nothing like your little nightmare, sorry to say. While their ships wander the galaxy, visiting all sorts of attractions. There's one system, I hear, with the most fantastic athletes. Something to do with the density of the world and its land features, but really, they're a sight to behold.
and another world's one big library, an archive of all the galaxy's knowledge. Beautiful promenades. Imra swallowed heavily before attempting to speak again.
And Nov. Novan Prime.
Creases at the corners of Yarun's eyes suggested incomprehension, but the medical officer pulled up a system file and cried out in triumph.
Ah, yes, the mausoleum.
A solemn little system, that. Museums and graveyards almost everywhere, paying tribute to the heroism of those lost in the last great allegiance war. Gets a pretty good run of cruise ships passing through. Lots of allegiance members like to go and wring their hands over that sort of thing. Can't remember what started the whole war. Some monstrous affair involving despotic trade agents, I believe. But all so very sad. Never again, you know? Yarun nodded while scrolling through the file. Whole fleets wiped out in brutal double crosses. As well as some of the lunar bases, civilians and all, over 90 years ago. Say, that's not where you're... But when Yarun looked up, Imra was already touching with amazement the sudden flood of dampness on his cheeks. Yarun offered a gentle smile with its lipless mouth.
When we scanned you, we saw that you had some sort of neural block. Fascinating monstrosity. Stopping the signal for some fairly important hormonal reactions. I know some of the worlds still use these things, but not many. Barbaric, really. So, I know we didn't ask, but we took it out while repairing the rest of the stasis damage. If you want it back...
No,
said Imra, choking on the outpouring of his grief. He'd had his suspicions, which was why he had asked Paloma to plot the course for his life pod differently, to aim it farther than those for the rest of the team, who'd been given flight paths on limited thrusters that would have found their occupants waking maybe 10 years later, still in the system and ready to infiltrate any dominant allegiance force in operation around Novan Prime. A long-term assassination plot, granted, but the Novuni's only real hope of living to fight again. But the truth of the matter, the cause for the war in the first place, proved even worse than General Aceris had suggested it might be. What son was theirs, that neither loved nor hated her people, but rather operated with cool indifference towards the Novuni, having raised them up for a slaughter that served the whims of other systems' worlds. Yarun waited for Imra to regain some measure of composure.
We still have to decide what to do with you,
it said softly.
All dead.
Your system?
Yarun checked the file.
Well, mostly.
But there's a continent on one of the planets, Nov, that was already pretty volatile. Says here that Allegiance didn't bother destroying its settlements, because their existence seemed squalid enough. Sorry, just reading the file. Tough people, though, I imagine, to survive at all out there. Imra was silent. At first he humored thoughts of his garage still standing, and Paloma and Ren having started a family that stretched out over the lost century, and Biggs and Tripp and Hurley having made some sort of decent post-war life for themselves before the valley did them in. But no, the landscape was too fickle, too restless for the sort of feel-good story that those who believed in her loving embrace might desire. So he imagined a supervolcano instead, washing the whole mess of the continent's peoples away. But that was too easy, too. A conceit of the path, restless to be done with an unforgiving world. Imbra's emotions, left to their own devices, lurched from one extreme to the other for the first time in months and a century. Still, he knew his own path lay somewhere in the middle of the Gospels, or maybe an eternity removed from both.
He remembered the recovery ward in the courts, and how, as the urgent need for more crystal bled from his system, a sudden calmness rose instead. A drug unto itself. The joke had always been on the courts after that day, for the D-Claw only gave him more of what he wanted. Only made it harder, despite his all-too-human inclinations, to remain addicted to anger, fear, and grief.
"You play dead in the valley to survive," said the ancient Novuni man at last. "Dead in your heart, dead in your veins. And eventually, when they catch you doing what everyone else does, dead in your brains. But there's another kind of stillness in the universe, isn't there?"
"Well, yes," said Yarun. "All kinds, I'd imagine."
"Good. Then that's where I'll start."
While Yarun attempted a hesitant reply, involving the possibility of placement on a science vessel soon to be passing by, Imbra turned with great effort to the nearest porthole, which revealed a series of stars unknown to him, each with its own peoples and their own notions of inner peace. He knew then that he couldn't defeat the Allegiance, an empire that went to such lengths to complete itself through domination sport, the complete distortion of other worlds and cultures to suit its idlest wants and needs. Nevertheless, Imbra knew he could at least try to find and name them, all the forms of detachment through which a man might yet go unconquered, though every fiber in his being longed to cry out and give in. "The center of my sky no longer boasts a native sun." Imbra turned the words over and over in his restless mind. A new sort of Novuni proverb in the making, and set his sights on a day when he might almost believe them, too.